Welcome back to another episode of the Modern Multifamily Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Wilbur, and today was a really special conversation. I'm really lucky to know Dom Beveridge. He's done a lot for our industry over the past 10 plus years, and most recently, he's come out with one of the most incredible pieces of content that we all look forward to every spring. It's called 20 for 20. Dom sits down with 20 senior-level executives on the operator side of our industry to uncover top trends and areas of focus that he can then share as insight for the rest of us. In this show, we dig into some of the top learnings that Dom shares in 20 for 20, things like centralization and what it actually means, not just leasing, but property admin and maintenance as well, topics like business intelligence, AI, ESG, and we even hit on ancillary revenue near the end. This conversation was fun and quite insightful, and I definitely encourage you to head over to 20for20.com to download the free white paper, and I'll be sure to include that in the show notes. For now, enjoy this incredible conversation with Dom Beveridge. Let's get into it. All right, Dom, welcome back to Modern Multifamily.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
You just released your fifth edition of 20 for 20, a white paper that I love to read each year. And I'd love to start up front with a little bit about your firm and the paper and research before we jump into the learnings from this edition.
Yeah, sure. So 20 for 20 is a consultancy that kind of grew out of the publication. The publication is now, it's its fifth year, its fifth edition. But 20 for 20 started in a year and a bit ago. Basically, 20 for 20 is a consultancy that mostly helps technology vendors find bigger markets in the multifamily industry through some combination of strategy, content creation, campaigns, marketing, yada yada yada. so that's what the firm does. The paper. I think the thing that's sort of useful about 20 for 20 and the reason why lots of people read it is really two things. One, it's very difficult to understand intent in multifamily, especially if you're trying to ask questions like why are people adopting technology? The reason for that is it's an incredibly fragmented industry. You know, it's very difficult to generalize what one company does to what other companies do in the industry. So it's very difficult to find information out by doing a check the box kind of survey with people. So for that reason, 20 for 20 is just structured around 20 conversations. So we curate really carefully who the 20 participant companies are. It's always 10 COOs and 10 heads of technology. And the questions are always open-ended. So whenever you see a statistic in there, it's a description of the answers that we got rather than a category that was handed to somebody during the interview. The other super, super important thing is that it's anonymous. I mean, you probably know all of the people who took part in 20 for 20, but we don't say who they are. And the reason that's important is that people give you a very, very different answer if in an anonymous, confidential conversation than they would, for example, on an industry panel. So I think it kind of gives the industry something a little bit different from the other things that we look to understand what's going on.
I think the anonymity side of it is actually one of the most interesting things about consuming the guide is I printed it off, gave it to a bunch of my colleagues, required that my leadership team read it. And it's interesting because I do feel like you're like almost harnessing the voice of the elite in our industry. And the mystery there is also so somewhat interesting because you do get a raw perspective. So hearing the intention behind that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And as we know, anything that's to do with technology, if you're sort of innovating anything, it entails failure. Like failure is hard to talk about. Like people will tell you, we tried this and it didn't work, or I'm very skeptical of this thing because of X, Y, Z. The kinds of things that would be hard to say on an industry webinar or in front of hundreds of people in a room, like those are often the most important like things that you learn.
So I'm looking at the introduction. You could kind of start with the 2022 look back and then the look forward for 2023. To me, there were a couple surprises in this year's white paper, but a lot of head nods for me. Centralization seemed to seriously steal the show this year. Lots of discussion on the subcategories of centralization too, not just leasing, but talking about property admin and maintenance, AI, technology versus operations. I'd love to start, Dom, with kind of an overarching question. Were there any surprises for you as you got through these interviews and the data? Did you think it would go a certain direction, or was it kind of in line with what you expected?
So I do think the probably my favorite insight once I'd read through everything was the difference between it's like the difference between what people are interested in and what they kind of think they're focused on and the actual work that's going on or the actual progress that's being made. So unsurprisingly, I mean, there's no surprise at all that leasing is top of mind. It's the highest priority. It's the thing that people seem the most motivated to work on. It's definitely not the area where people are making the most progress. It's the area where people are rolling out the most technology, for sure. But if you think about centralization as entailing moving roles from property to somewhere where they can be done more efficiently, that's overwhelmingly property admin where people are doing that. And I think there are common sense reasons why that's the case. But it did actually surprise me when I looked at it. You see the intent and the reality, and you just see this sort of disconnect between the two of them. And that was probably the thing that sort of jumped out at me. And it's funny when I'm briefing the people who took part in it, I can sort of tell the bits that they sort of lean forward and look at the screen for. And that I think was one of the big ones as far as they were concerned.
As you dig in, I mean, it's a pretty lengthy section on centralization, how it's being deployed, where people are at in their life cycle. Did you find that there was consensus across the board that it's those three core categories of centralization, leasing, maintenance, then property admin? Or were there any outliers there in terms of where people are thinking about utilizing that centralization mindset to find more efficiency this year?
Those seem to be the right categories. I noticed that when I've been briefing people, they ask, what exactly do we mean by admin? And so leasing, that everyone knows what that means. Maintenance, everyone knows what that means. Admin is a bit more amorphous. So you know, as soon as you say, well, it's primarily the stuff that we associate with the assistant property manager role, right? It's bookkeeping, it's rent, it's you know, late payments, it's all of that stuff. They're like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. But it just seems it doesn't have that sort of resonance that the other two do. I was fascinated by a couple of things about those results. One of them, which actually is consistent with the thing that I just talked about, everyone seems to be in one of two categories. Either they've done it already, they've taken these roles offsite, or they're close to doing it, or they're not thinking about it at all, right? So it sort of it strikes me that the step between beginning to think about it and completing it is relatively short compared to the other two. That's the one where that's the sort of least well defined in people's minds, but it's also probably the biggest piece of low hanging fruit by the looks of things.
So I'm looking at page 25, and one of the common questions that we're talking about with customers or prospective customers, you know, is certainly, where are you at in the spectrum of centralized leasing? And it was interesting seeing, I think 75% of the conversations you had were either in the not currently planning or the planning to plan stage. Mm-hmm. And that surprised me, especially since I assume you're talking to like a mid-market or upper end of the market, you know, persona. Did that surprise you? I'm curious kind of what the learning is here.
Yeah, it did. I mean, my gut told me the centralization part of centralization is probably not as far along as you'd think based on the industry hype. But the fact that there were only like 3 out of 20 companies that were anywhere meaningful sort of along the path, that surprised me. There are a few sort of interesting things about that. Like the people who've made real headway on this, what they all tell you is that the technology part of it is relatively straightforward. It's the people process stuff is hard. Like, you've really got to commit to doing this. And there's some pain you typically have to go through when you once you start. There's some risk associated with it as well. So I sort of get the hesitation. I do notice it's very striking how many people are buying the technology to support centralization before they do the centralization part. Like, I understand the way people view that, like, because sometimes you've got to test the technology and understand what difference it's going to make to your business, and then decide whether or not, okay, this lightens the load sufficiently that I can make this change. But there is an element where, you know, it's a New Year's resolution where I'm going to buy sneakers and a gym membership. Now the question is, do I acquire the habits that I need to?
Sure. Well, I mean, let's jump into that as kind of like a next section then. I mean, there's definitely a difference between technology and like organization readiness as it relates to these massive changes, like implementing any sort of centralized model. From my perspective, I'm seeing more and more use of outside or inside consultants to come in and like redefine the org structure, the product roadmap for operators, not for technology partners, to get these initiatives off the ground. Did you come out of this with any playbook learnings on, hey, the best way to go from thinking about it to doing it is X, or were there any learnings there?
Yes, I am. Again, because relatively few people are making progress, particularly on the leasing part, like, it's a small, by definition, a small number of observations. But it looks to me like you're probably I think there's an escalation in difficulty. Like, leasing, although leasing is the biggest priority, it's not the easiest thing to do. I think maintenance is the hardest. Leasing is the second hardest, and I think the lowest hanging fruit is admin. And there's if you think about it, admin generally in business sort of lends itself to shared service models. So I think the playbook might actually be that if you want to make progress on centralizing something like leasing, you're probably likelier to figure it out if you started with admin, because admin is relatively easy. If you think about it, lots of the jobs that you're taking off site are jobs that people don't even like doing in the first place, right? I mean, sure. And the other thing that really sort of interested me about some of the responses is that I think once you start thinking about taking admin off site, you sort of realize it was never that good of an idea to have these roles be done on site in the first place, right? Taking gifted leasing agents and promoting them to be bookkeepers was always a bit counterintuitive. So, you know, you automatically get quite a lot of quite attractive benefits from making that move. And it's sort of less risky than something that affects your revenue pipeline like leasing does. So I kind of think my number one piece of advice might be start with admin. Take your lumps on doing that, figure out how you make the organizational changes, and then graduate to the harder thing, which is centralizing leasing.
And I'd say, like, I mean, a logical example here of property admin, you talked about it in the guide, would be collections, right? Putting that, yes, in a centralized role versus putting that on your PM or your leasing staff.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
As you talked about centralization with folks, did you get a sense of what the sentiment's been from their organizations, especially the ones that are putting into practice? Is there concern on this? I definitely see a polarized perspective on LinkedIn and at conferences and talking about this. It's like, I love it or I hate it. And you're talking to some of the smartest names in the space. What are the people in the organizations, not necessarily just the executives, saying or thinking about it?
So there was some disagreement amongst people who had done this as to whether it's like 2 months of pain after you do it or 1 month. if you're encountering people who hate it, it might reflect the point that they're at in the process. So yeah, it sounds like there's if you're doing this, you're centralizing for the first time, it sounds like there's no way of avoiding the fact that it's just culturally a little bit difficult for people when they start. The extent to which you commit to it obviously seems to get you through that. People, even in well organized companies that have sort of done this properly, you do get these tendencies for teams to try and retake over like various processes that have been put into a central team. So it seems like there are pretty strong impulses to stick to the status quo. But yeah, the benefits seem to strongly outweigh the difficulty in getting there.
One of the things you talk about in your data and analytics section 3.5, is BI, and you specifically have a section called A Growing Appetite for Insight. And then near the end of the guide, you actually get specific about the future of BI seemingly being brighter in the industry. Were there any core takeaways there? Is that the fact that last year was such a hot revenue growth year and now people are really pulling out the magnifying glass? Or is that just the industry finally catching up on unifying data to make better decisions at scale?
I think it's probably more the latter. I mean, the big thing that I really notice, because it's just an area, I come from a revenue management background, so it's an area that I'm naturally very sort of curious about. The general story over the years with these interviews has been that people are just never that excited about their BI, right? They the industry has a slightly odd way of adopting it, right? The way that the projects play out, people tend to sort of focus on, well, we've got to integrate this stuff and we built this report and we they focus on the mechanics of it, but to do BI well is fundamentally about trying to find more things out, right, about the business. And that was the difference that we saw this year. And it was why I wrote up in detail, there were so many really, really good examples of insights that people were trying to find out about their business that I just wanted to put them in their entirety, because the sort of thing that I noticed was when you ask the question, tell me something that you're trying to learn about your business that you couldn't have found out without your BI platform. Most people, like nearly everybody, had a really good example of something insightful, like some new thing that they were trying to learn about their business. And bearing in mind that conversation always tends to be about, well, we wanted to get this report out to properties and in a more timely way or whatever. That's not the examples that people came out with were all about like correlation. They were all about how does this thing drive that thing, which is super interesting because that's really the right way to think about BI. Like you're pulling bits of data together, and you're the value you're adding to the data is you're trying to find out how this thing influences that thing or what action it drives as a result. And that seems to be the way that people are thinking about it now. That coupled with the fact that there was a lot of senior hiring going on in the industry for your internal BI resources or tech leads with a strong like data background. That was definitely a big thing this year. I think 19 out of 20 companies had done a BI project during 2022. And also the fact that companies had in some cases made architectural changes to their, moving their database and their applications to the cloud because they see this escalation in the amount of processing power they have to throw at it because the analytical part of it is very resource intensive, especially as people want to start experimenting with like AI and that kind of thing. So again, all of these things add up to it's the stuff that people are trying to find out about their business that seems to be driving the enterprise, and that's a sign of maturing capability, in my opinion.
That's such a good point. I mean, I'd never really thought about it that way, and I just pulled up the guide while you were talking about it. It's pages 33 and 34, where you actually ask participants to share like what their learnings were. And one of them, the question was, we wanted to know which industries our residents worked in so we could be proactive in telling investors what our exposure was specifically related to investors. That's so smart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think my favorite might have been the one, somebody had a, so one of the companies wanted to give all site teams access to their bonus potential. And this company has a relatively complex combination of scores that they use to drive bonuses, right? So there's customer sat, there's reputation, there's various performance things. And so they had used their BI platform to create a dashboard that was available to everybody that tells them exactly what their how their bonus is calculated and where they are for each metric at the moment. And yeah, you want to drive behavior off data. That seems like a really cool way to do it.
One of the sections that I really liked near the end kind of almost felt like the hot take section. You talk about ESG, you definitely talk about AI. I'd love to dig into the AI section with you, Dom. I loved that you talked about the industry still almost like looking at AI as being widgets, but that when you look to, you know, the Mark Andreessens of the world, there's so much more. Obviously, you and Mike Brewer have had some brilliant conversations on OpenAI revolutionizing kind of at scale how we think about it this year. Whether it comes from your conversations in 2020 or just your personal perspective, what are some thoughts here in terms of where multifamily is today versus where you see us being able to be with what's available right now in the world of AI?
Yeah, well the Mark Andreessen thing that I wrote up in there, he just said something very interesting in an interview that I was listening to a few weeks ago. He was saying that the question people are missing about AI is what do people do? And what he meant by that was the wrong framing is to think about what tasks that I do, can I get AI to do for me, right? It's so obvious that there are just going to be some things that AI just comprehensively outperforms humans at. So the idea of sort of relegating a technology as powerful as that as to, you know, as you said, like to be widgets that just take jobs off my hands, there are a couple of problems with that. One, that's not going to be the adoption model, right? It's you can't structure the AI around, you know, sort of shortfalls in human ability. You should put the AI where it's going to deliver the most value. The critical thing with that is, I mean, there are going to be many, many, many AI startups coming out in multifamily, I'm sure, during the course of this year. To sustain an ecosystem, that AI has to be doing stuff that's valuable, right? And what you notice with this sort of widget idea of like, oh, well, we can get it to do this part, we can get it to do this piece, is that the problems already are sort of getting smaller and smaller and smaller, right? If you think about something like collections, which is a really interesting area where people are testing AI that takes over collections. Like who doesn't want collections to go away as a human activity, right? If I think about that, there's some value in allowing rolling out an AI to do collections so that an assistant property manager just doesn't have to anymore and they can focus on other stuff. There's far more value in saying, all right, if this AI can do collections, and we know that people are centralizing admin functions, from now on, all of our properties, collections is going to be predominantly done by AI. So we have an AI running this thing. Now, what do people do? The Mark Andreessen question. And then the answer to that question is much more like, well, we need people to supervise. We need people to be the point of escalation. We need human conversation sometimes. So you can design the role or the part of the role around the thing that the human is going to do really well, rather than just pushing the AI out to the sidelines. That's interesting technologically because it means that AI becomes really valuable. Then do you know what I mean? It means that it's delivering some actual leverage into my business. So you know it's changing maybe the model where the relationship between the number of properties I run and the number of staff I have is linear, like the way it always has been. And it means there's now this leverage that comes from this technology, and the technology is going to do the job better than the people, and the people are going to enjoy doing the people part rather than just calling people asking them to pay their rent all the time.
It's actually a really good reframe. I mean, I think a lot of times when we talk to customers about harnessing AI at any scale, whether it's for telephony or for anything tied to their leasing process, it almost sometimes becomes like a defensive conversation. Well, like, what about our people or what's left? But reframing that and starting with like, what should our people do? And then like, what could be automated or outsourced or AI'd? That's a really cool way to just almost like reframe the conversation, make it a little bit more proactive in terms of seeing the opportunities to deploy that kind of tech.
Yeah. And if you take it back to the conversation about centralization, again, I think all of the companies, when we talk about leasing, all of the companies who are down the path of centralizing leasing, AI was a critical ingredient in it, right? So again, they took the step of, all right, so if we're reimagining leasing where, you know, the lion's share of the work of getting someone from an initial call through to booking a tour is going to be done by AI, what then does a central leasing function look like? What are those people going to do? What are the things that we need them to focus their time on? That's a step that had definitely been taken by the people who are making progress on centralization. I think the de facto model of implementing digital leasing assistance in multifamily is to just run it alongside the same leasing model you've always had. So I think the opportunity to think bigger, like if this thing works to the extent that you can turn the phones off at properties, it probably works to the extent that you can think a little bit more broadly about what do I want my people to do.
I would definitely agree. You're on a bit of a media tour right now. Is there anything you want to chat through on the guide that hasn't been brought up yet?
I mean, we didn't talk about nobody's talked about the ESG thing yet. I don't know if it's just so intuitive to property managers. It was the first time a year ago, I started to get the impression just from the responses I got from last year's survey that ESG was becoming a bigger and bigger thing. And it was starting to influence decisions about what projects companies do. So as I prep for this year's calls with the people who I tend to use to help me frame the questions that I ask, there was a bit of a consensus that it was, ESG is a big priority. We should find out more about it. So I can't remember the exact question, but I think it was literally, is it a priority? And then tell me what you did. In 2022. The big takeaway for me is that there's a big, big difference between impact and sort of compliance. And unfortunately, for most of the people I spoke to, it's largely an exercise in categorizing things that I would have done anyway as having an environmental benefit. I actually think my sort of learning from this is I actually think it's really hard to actually have an environmental impact if the lever that you're trying to pull is operations. Like if you think about like everything you would do to have an environmental impact in, you know, social and governance is different. But if we think about the environmental part of it, almost everything that you would do to drive an environmental benefit is something that you're supposed to do anyway. Like you're supposed to minimize the amount of utilities you use. You're supposed to offer EV charging stations so that your residents have somewhere to charge their cars. So if I think about it in terms of actually making a difference, I think it's very hard to identify things that operations can do. And so I sort of arrived at the conclusion that it's maybe on the wrong desk if we want to actually be impactful. There's probably far more that you can do in terms of how we build multifamily, like the stuff that we consume in maintaining multifamily properties. It probably, for impact, it ends up in operations because there's reporting involved. But I think operations is the wrong lever, and hence it should probably be on a different desk if we really want to make progress on it.
I liked your take there, especially on the E and how you framed it in the guide. I thought it was a cool section.
Last question that's guide related for you. If you're thinking through 2024, do you have any ideas now as to what you think this conversation is going to look like in a year? Will you see more people moving forward in centralization? Do you think you'll see entirely new topics of conversation that these top 20 executives are going to be thinking about?
I mean, my curiosity right now about next year's is I want to see how stuff accelerates. We didn't talk about maintenance, but maintenance is interesting. It's like hard. You can tell why people sort of resist doing it. There's really legitimate reasons why I would I would want to do that kind of last out of the various property management functions. But you can see there are ways that people are making progress on it, and they're not that hard. It's not a completely technology driven thing. It's more there are sort of baby steps that you can take that seem to deliver quite a lot of improvement. I obviously write about a particular view on that in the book, but that for example is something that I could see moving quite quickly as soon as people see that. All right, well, if I change these things, then I'm kind of on the path towards there. So I'm curious to see if some of the ideas that we talk about in here start to get traction during the next year. I'm fascinated by the pace of change, like in terms of actual changing of models versus adoption of technology. Like, do you get sort of stuck in a situation where we've got all the technology, we still got all the people, we haven't really changed that much, or do people start taking successive steps? So, you know, I'm already in the back of my mind. I'm already thinking about, all right, how do you create a safe space for people to talk about what they did in the whether it's any different from what they did a year earlier or not. That's probably where my mind is right now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when you bring that up. Like, over the past 6 or 7 months, we've had a couple of big wins on our business's side, you know, really competitive deals. And we're seeing more and more like formal committees being built out within our clients to really prioritize what solutions we're looking at, what we're not prioritizing on. And it does feel like the industry is slowly learning how to buy and implement software, which I think will change a lot of the ability to actually, at least in my opinion, make sure that the technology you're buying doesn't get dusty, which I think too often does happen. You buy this incredible piece of tech, but your business isn't ready for it. And a year later, you want to cancel, but it's your fault. And I'm interested to see there if we see more smart folks, you know, entering organizations or consulting to really guide in prioritization and focus. Because I do think there's still so much room for improvement there in buying, selecting, but also implementing, you know, technology.
Yeah, and it's there are lots of questions, I think, especially when you think about something like centralization, which is really big imperative. Like, so although I say centralization probably isn't the word, the thing that people mean when they say centralization is clearly a really, really big deal in the industry right now. But there is frequently the question of is this primarily a technology problem, or is this or is this something that we should be thinking about, you know, where we should be putting the people in front of the technology, I think is something that I would also be wanting to make more kind of mindful decisions about.
Did ancillary revenue or just like ancillary services come up in your conversations? It wasn't a core focus of the guide, but I just studied about 10 or so earnings reports from Q4, all REITs, and felt like ancillary services was a huge focus of discussion, with revenue growth just not being, you know, projected this year what it was going to be last. Lots of people thinking unique ways to find revenue, different chargeback models to ownership groups, or of course, just general ancillary revenue. Did anything there come up, Dom? I know I'm kind of throwing you a curveball.
Yeah, no, it didn't actually. It's funny, people's reaction to the, you know, to like the slowdown in deals and rent growth and so on is much more about cost, in my just based on the conversations that we just had. So, you know, people talk about eliminating overlap, people sort of talk about you know, wanting to focus on getting people to renew, you know, the usual stuff when people are unsure about what the, you know, what the, what performance is going to be like. You tend to, I noticed as well that, you can definitely see that short-term rentals is starting to become at least somewhat relevant again. Like, it's funny, before COVID, I mean, obviously COVID just shut the whole sector down for a while, but before COVID, it was attracting enormous interest. There were lots of vendors coming into the space. There were some compelling stories from people that were doing it, but you could tell it was going to need a drop in occupancy, or the risk of a drop in occupancy, for that business to get really big in multifamily. Because, you know, why would you focus on that if I never have any vacancy? But you can tell now as well, for partly because people want to get control of subletting, but also partly because you might need more tools in your toolkit for revenue. That was definitely starting to creep back onto people's agendas.
Yeah, well, we're seeing Airbnb, you know, strike up formal alliances with some of our bigger customers. So we just finished up getting ready to deploy that integration. We're also seeing companies like Central, like, stand on this value proposition and really go at it, which I think what they're doing is awesome. I'm sure there's some mixed opinions, but I think what Central is doing is really cool, unique, getting a seat at the table with legislation to even change what it looks like in some markets where it historically has been tougher to do. So I'm interested to see. I definitely think there's a shift right now in renters by choice versus renters by necessity. And I think that's going to drive some really unique decision-making and opportunities on the technology side and certainly on the operation side of our industry.
Yeah, and I think so. I think so too.
Well, hey, looking forward to 2024, you've probably already got your top 20 selected. Whether it's, you know, someone who really wants to have their logo as a sponsor in your white paper next year, or a top 20 exec that just needs to have their sanitized voice as part of the conversations. How can people get in touch with Dom? And I want to roll out the red carpet for you as we close out today.
Oh, fantastic. So that's 20for20.com, 20for20, 20for20.com is where you can reach me, and also where you can download your free copy of the of the white paper. Or you can find me on Twitter at Dom Beveridge or on LinkedIn.
Rock and roll, Dom. Well, hey, I'll wish you all the best in the media tour. I love the guide, and I look forward to seeing you on the circuit here in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I always enjoy this conversation.